Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 88, Zero Gravity. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's guest co-host, CJ Chris Johnston.
Howdy, Chris. How's it going?
Things are going pretty well. We were off last week. My schedule's a little messed up, but I had a good time being out of town, and I'm having a good time being back, and I'm ready to start talking about Nintendo again.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Of course, we do have some new game impressions to talk about. We've got a little bit of news. We've got some reader mail. And then we've got this week's big topic, or maybe it's more of a little topic, but it's about Nintendo's other console. Yes, there's still the 3DS, and so we're going to be discussing what we've been playing on our Nintendo 3DS systems according to our activity logs. So that's what we'll be discussing later in the show. But speaking of the 3DS, let's actually start off with some 3DS chatter. That is some impressions of one of the latest Nintendo releases, Mario Sports Superstars. This, of course, is the sports compilation game that includes five distinct sports. There's tennis, golf, baseball, soccer, and horse racing, all in one package on the Nintendo 3DS.
I've always wanted a Mario horse racing game.
Well, your dreams are coming true.
But it's on the wrong system. It needs to be on the Switch.
Well, there's nothing wrong with still having some stuff on 3DS. The 3DS has had a lot of great games, and I think the system still has some life left in it. And I think this game is a pretty good illustration of that. Now, you haven't had a chance to play this yourself, have you, right?
No, I have not, but I've played several Mario Sports games separately, but not this compilation.
Well, if you've done that, then you know a lot about what's in here, because some of the games are very reminiscent of, you know, previous Mario Sports titles. Like playing the tennis that's in this game, it's very, very similar to what was in Mario Tennis Ultra Smash or Mario Tennis Open. You know, maybe it's even a little bit better, but it's very similar. So it's not really breaking any new ground. But, you know, when you played Mario Tennis Ultra Smash on the Wii U, it was like, here's your tennis. It's bare bones tennis. This is all you get. And, you know, this is kind of the same thing, but then you got, you know, four other sports to play. So it's kind of okay that it doesn't have a ton of extra bells and whistles. And the tennis is very solid.
I do wonder why they do this where, you know, earlier Mario Sports games had, you know, like a story mode or a quest mode, something like that. And
yeah, that stuff on the handhelds, on the Game Boy Color, you know, everyone loved that stuff.
Yeah, and recently they just kind of jettisoned that for this very bare bones simulation stuff. And I don't know if I like that, but
yeah,
maybe if the gameplay is good, I guess that's all that really matters. But
well, you make a very good point, and that has been an issue with their sports games as of late. And I would have loved it if they had just said, okay, we're going to add, you know, some very deep additional modes to the game. But instead, they've just said, well, we're going to have, you know, kind of bare bones sports, but we're going to put five of them in one package. And because of that, this definitely feels robust. It does not feel like they're skimping. It really does fulfill the promise of five full-fledged sports. It's got single player, multiplayer, online for everything. It actually has stereoscopic 3D visuals, and everything seems to play pretty well. Like I said, tennis is very comparable to what we played before. Golf plays pretty darn well. It's also like previous Mario Golf games. It's not very Mario-y. There's nothing too wacky or silly going on. It's just, you know, really good, solid golf. Baseball, I haven't really played the previous Mario Baseball games, so I can't really compare them too much, but if anything, this has like more options than I need. It's got lots of nuances to adjust the way you play, and I almost wish there was just a stripped down mode without all this extra stuff, because, you know, I went and played the tutorial, but it just sort of glossed over a lot of these advanced options. But still, you know, just, you know, regular playing, batting, pitching, all that stuff works really well, and it's, you know, it's enjoyable to play, it's fun, and it is simple enough that anyone could jump in without worrying about those advanced options. Same goes with soccer. It's solid, it's easy to pick up and play, it's fun, and, you know, you have some trick shots and things, but for the most part, it's nothing, you know, too crazy going on. Horse racing, of course, is the brand new addition, and in some ways, it makes me wonder if this was, like, where the whole thing started, where they're like, yeah, let's do a new horse racing game on 3DS. And they're like, wait, we don't have quite enough to make this its own game, so let's throw in all these other sports we've done before. But it's very interesting. It is kind of like Mario Kart with horses. Okay. I mean, you don't just hold down the button to accelerate. You're tapping the B button to dash, which drains your stamina meter. Then there's an A button to jump, and you can, you know, jump over obstacles or you can run around obstacles. But you're picking up collectibles as you're going around the track. You can replenish your stamina, so you can, you know, keep mashing that B button. And then there are other collectibles that let you earn boosts. Every time you collect five of them, you can use another boost. You can store up to three boosts. And of course, you know, one of the strategies is to, you know, make sure you have three boosts at the end so you can, you know, run past the competition and get to the end and, you know, beat the other guys that way.
Hmm. Are there any customization options for your horses or for the Mario characters in this?
There definitely are. I haven't explored all the character customization options. I think they might be tied to Amiibo somewhat. And I haven't really done anything with the Amiibo aspect. As for the horses, though, there's actually an entire mode dedicating to training and you know, sort of customizing your horses. It's kind of like Nintan horses, to be honest.
That's awesome.
And that's what makes me think that maybe this was originally the heart of some other game, or was just going to be all about horses, because it's all in there, just like Nintendogs. You pet them, you feed them, you clean them, you take them on walks, and then they find items while you're out walking. And, you know, you can use that to customize your horse's visual appearance at the very least.
Hmm.
And as you do that, you're building up your bond with the horse. And apparently, the more you do this, the better they'll perform in the races. So, yeah, there's a lot going on here with the horses, which is kind of cool, but also kind of weird, because in real life, I'm actually terrified of horses. So it's a bit of an odd thing for me.
Maybe they thought that they had to put other sports in there for the other markets outside Japan, because horse racing games have kind of been a staple of video games in Japan for a long time, but not so much in...
Yeah, G1 jockey and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and also, I imagine that the horse racing and the horse care, it would probably appeal very much to maybe a younger female audience, but maybe they thought, well, by having that as well as soccer and other stuff, we can appeal, you know, very broadly. We can appeal to, you know, males and older players as well. Not that other people won't be able to get anything out of horse racing, but I think that it does skew more towards that demographic than perhaps others.
Yeah.
As I said, I haven't spent a ton of time with the game. I've only played each mode a few times, but I did find myself going back, especially to tennis and golf, and yes, even to the horse racing a little bit. You know, soccer and baseball, you know, I've never been really big on the Mario team sports, so I didn't do as much with those. But still, I feel like I'm definitely getting my money's worth out of this.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I played a lot of Mario Golf. But I have not played any of the other Mario sports games. So I wonder if I picked this up, if I get like a little introduction to some of those other games through this, because I like the golf so much.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think you probably would. I mean, the golf, you know, it's not, you know, super extensive. I think there are only four courses. And they have nine regular holes, and then there's, you know, the option to like start further back. So it's not like there are 18 full holes, but if you, you know, sort of fudge the numbers, it's almost like there are per course.
Okay. Hmm.
So it's not, you know, super robust on its own as far as the golf goes, but you know, it does play a very good game of golf, and there are the other sports in there. You know, tennis obviously is very well liked. It's by the same development crew at Camelot. So, yeah, there is a lot to enjoy here.
Hmm.
I do think that they missed an opportunity by not having some sort of overall, you know, superstar mode where you sort of alternate between the five sports and combine that into some, you know, sort of Olympic-style competition.
Yeah.
But, you know, we weren't promised that. They're delivering as advertised, and though they didn't capitalize on an opportunity like that or with an RPG mode, there's still, you know, five sports worth of good stuff in here. And you know, if you're into that sort of thing, yeah, it's worth it, I'd say.
Hmm.
Moving on from Mario Sports Superstars, that's not the only thing I've been playing. I've also been playing some stuff on the Switch, and I believe you have too.
That's right.
I picked up Snake Pass when it came out recently. Have you been enjoying this one?
I have. You know, it's a platformer where you're a snake and you
yes,
move left and right to kind of slither around. But
and doing that builds up speed.
Yep. Where I'm having a bit of trouble is climbing up the ladders, which of course that's kind of the whole point of the platforming in this game. You have to press a button to lift your head up.
Yes.
And I'm not quite getting the hang of of doing that, plus controlling the camera, plus adjusting my grip on whatever bamboo thing is holding me up at the time.
Plus, so you're constantly moving forward. You're accelerating by holding down the ZR trigger.
That's right. So I'm having a bit of trouble getting my head wrapped around the controls,
literally,
you might say.
And literally getting the snake's head wrapped around the objects. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm kind of encountering the same thing. There's some things I really like about it. It looks fantastic. It uses the Unreal Engine 4, and the game looks absolutely gorgeous. The music is pretty solid. And the idea of playing as a snake and, quote-unquote, thinking like a snake is pretty neat. It's a nifty, fun premise, and it breaks the levels down into these bite-sized chunks where you're doing sort of classic platforming, collectathon type of stuff, and I do really like that.
Yeah, me too.
But yes.
I like the platforming. The music's great. The visuals are really good. I think I heard some people knocking the visuals in handheld mode, but to me, they look fine. Like, I don't really see any problem with them at all. But for me, it's all about the control and not having a click yet, but I'm sure it will at some point.
Well, I'm encountering the same thing so far, and yeah, I haven't played a ton of this either, but yes, there's no easy way to wrap yourself around objects, and that's sort of what a snake is supposed to do. And they called this a physics-based platformer, but I did not realize it was about the physics of your character and manipulating your character properly. And it's like where you move your head and where you try to wrap around these things. And the challenge is just often making your character move the way you want him and expect him to. And on the very first level, clearing the level is easy, but if you want to get all 5 coins, that is quite a challenge. Did you go back to that first level and get all the coins?
I did not, in part because I saw where those coins were, and I just didn't think I was going to be able to get up there. So luckily, I'm not a completionist, so I didn't feel the need to go back. But
I figure if there's any level where I'm going to do that on, it's the first level.
Mm.
But yeah, some of these things are like hidden underneath the platforms or on the backside of the platforms. The only way you can get to them is by slithering around these bamboo constructs. And oh man, I just kept falling to my death over and over and over again, because there is not an easy way to wrap yourself around this stuff. But I kept trying, and eventually I did it, but it was very hard and very frustrating.
Yeah, there is an easy control option that I'm wondering if that might help. I think it changes the behavior of some of the movement and some of the grip stuff, so I'm wondering what I might do is I might switch to that, try a level or two with that, and see if things click, and then revert back to the other way if I'm able to get my head around the easy control method.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That sounds like a really good idea, actually.
Yeah.
Because when I'm playing it, I feel like it should be really easy just to go to a horizontal bar and, like a snake does, just sort of wrap around it and slither across. But it's just the hardest thing. I would just keep falling and falling. And
it's
like,
kind of
why
like
is it doing that?
Octodad or Quap, right? Like, it feels almost like that at times where
I haven't actually played those, not being on Nintendo systems.
well, you're controlling, each part of the limbs in those games. And it never feels quite fluid, and at least that's sort of where I am in Snake Pass.
Yes, I can understand the comparison.
Mm.
It'd be great if easy controls or even regular controls just had a button for like coiling around stuff instead of having to do it manually. Just like, hey, press the the B button, which I don't believe does anything in the standard control scheme. I'd be like, okay, they'll just wrap me around this post, and then you can move up and down. That would be really, really nice. But since it doesn't have that, it is often an exercise in frustration. And I'm only about, 40% through. But once or twice so far, I've thought like, man, oh, this is such a waste of my money. I'm going to throw my controller. I'm so angry at how many times I've fallen off this darn thing.
Well, don't do that in handheld mode or you'll be throwing the whole Switch across the room.
This is true. Fortunately, it was in docked mode. Mm. Yeah. Kids, don't throw your controller regardless.
That's right.
But yeah, I'm not totally sold on the game yet, but you make a good point. Hopefully easy mode will help with some of my control frustrations, because there is a lot to really like about this game, but I don't know if it's enough to make me put up with the often infuriating controls.
Yeah.
There are a couple other indie games that have been released on Switch that I haven't been playing, but you have, I believe.
I have.
You've been playing Has-Been Heroes, which I guess I did play at a demo event a couple weeks ago. I wasn't really sold on it, but you know, that wasn't the final game. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I had watched a couple videos on this, but I wasn't really sure what the gameplay was. I couldn't quite get what was going on.
Oh, and I understand that, because I was playing it and I didn't understand what was going on for like 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And then I saw some people on Twitter talking about it and how they were really enjoying it, and that it's kind of Plants vs. Zombies meets roguelike meets RPG sort of combat. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really intriguing. So I took a chance after picking up Snake Pass and kind of being disappointed with that a little bit. I decided to give Has-Been Heroes a try. I watched a couple more videos on it and then jumped in myself. So when you start the game, you meet this rogue who teams up with these Has-Been Heroes of legend to defeat a new evil. And
well, you're supposed to be taking the princesses to school or something.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, princesses to school. That's right. And they're always stationed behind. The princesses are always stationed behind your lineup of three warriors during the game.
Yeah, so there's three rows, and each one has a different character in it, right? And they're all just, you know, sort of marching forward and fighting off the bad guys.
That's correct. Yeah, and sort of like Plants vs. Zombies, the enemies march at you from right to left.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that you have to use each warrior and then switch lanes and try to combo attacks together and stun enemies by hitting them a number of times and removing their stamina.
Mm-hmm. And then their health.
And then their health, of course. And you can use different spells as well. And because it's a roguelike, you start over on each run. So I haven't even gotten past the first boss encounter in the game yet.
Oh yeah, I've heard that's tough.
Yeah, it is tough, but I'm slowly getting my head around the combat here, and the interface itself looks kind of confusing because you have like the...
Yes, it was very confusing to me.
The rows up top.
Yeah, the idea of changing rows and switching heroes like that didn't make any sense to me. It was really tough for me to figure out.
Yeah, it was tough for me to get my head around as well. And then you're using the left stick to choose spells from a sort of sub window on the screen, and use the right
now,
stick.
Spells seem pretty important too. If you just go in there, you know, just with melee attacks, you'll probably get overwhelmed really quickly.
That's definitely true. Yeah, you can use the spells. They really come in handy when trying to stun enemies, or there are certain buffs that you can give your heroes. I found in one of my runs, I found a spell that allowed me to push all of the enemies into only one of the rows and all way on the right. And I was like, oh, this is great. So when I used that spell, all of them went to the one row, one area. It made that stage very, very easy.
That's convenient.
Yes. Yeah, but it's an interesting concept, an interesting mix of gameplay styles that I wouldn't have thought would work well together, and I think it's really well pulled off. The problem for me is that the interface is you look at it and you can't tell what's going on. Like,
yeah, that was one of the main issues for me.
You really have to learn it.
So I'm hoping that after you've invested, you know, plenty of time in it, now it's finally starting to click with you.
Yeah, it is. And when you like pull off some combo attacks and start using the spells in conjunction with those, you get damage bonuses, and it starts to feel really rewarding.
Okay.
And it is sort of like a real-time game, but after each attack, it pauses the action. And you can use the L button to pause really at any time. So if you can take your time to develop a strategy and then pull it off really quick using the buttons. It's pretty nice.
Okay.
I was surprised.
Well, cool. That's good to hear. I'm glad that someone was able to get into it, even if I was not.
Yeah, and I really like the art style, too. It's charming, and it has like a a real humor to some of the character interactions as well, and the dialogue trees. And I think some of the maps are randomly generated, or at least the placements of battles mm-hmm. versus some good stuff. So as you wander around this map, you can collect new spells or get keys or unlock treasure chests and do different things like that. And that's sort of mixed in with between each battle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So overall, are you giving this one a thumbs up?
I would say thumbs up to this one, even though I think it got a sort of lukewarm reception in reviews. I mm-hmm. think between Snake Pass and Has-Been Heroes, I think Has-Been Heroes is in the lead for me.
Well, for me, like I said, I haven't played the final Has-Been Heroes, but my time spent with them, I still do like Snake Pass better out of the two. But mm-hmm. you know, you spend a lot more time with it than I have, so I certainly respect that. And I imagine that Has-Been Heroes is a game that improves the more you understand what's going on. But then again, probably the same is true with Snake Pass, probably coming to grips, no pun intended, with that control scheme as well.
I think you're right.
And that's not all. There was another new release that just came out today that you've been playing, right?
Yeah, I only got a few minutes into Graceful Explosion Machine.
But that game was looking pretty cool, and it was shown at the Nindies event several weeks back.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little space shooter. It has pretty bright, vibrant graphics. And this is another one where I watched some footage of it and thought it looked right up my alley, kind of like a mix between Pixel Junk Shooter and Geometry Wars.
Yeah, it gave off a very strong Geometry Wars vibe to me
yeah.
when I first saw it.
Yeah, it definitely does. You get, you know, as you combo enemy kills, that increases your score multiplier. So, mm-hmm. And there's a leaderboard system as well where you can compete against the world or just your friends list. So okay. that definitely reminded me of Geometry Wars as well. And they have different power-ups, different weapons that you can get. So one of the first ones you get is a sword that does like a circle slash around you.
Nice.
Which is kind of nice. But you're using the ZL trigger to switch directions. So you're really, at least so far, and this may change after the tutorial stages, so far for me, it's left and right movement only. There's no real up or down movement.
Huh, interesting.
And you switch with the ZL.
Huh, very curious.
I really can't wait to play more because this game is right up my alley because I love Geometry Wars and I love space shooters just in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to dumping more time into that.
Well, cool. Glad to hear that you're liking it so far. What's the price tag on this one?
It's $12.99 US.
Okay. Yeah. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Speaking of indie games on Switch, though, Nicolas confirmed recently that one of their more popular titles is indeed going to be coming to the Switch in the not-too-distant future. That is Cave Story Plus. Going to be coming out in June. It's going to be $30, and it's going to be getting a physical release. I don't know about you, CJ, but I thought that Cave Story was fantastic when it first came out on Wii. I loved it on the 3DS, and I just think it's an extraordinary game. I am more than happy to play it again when it comes out on Switch.
Yeah, I liked Cave Story. I was terrible at it, though. But I do remember, I think, didn't Nicolas have, right around the Switch launch, they did like mock-up box art for several games, and Cave Story was one of them. I wonder if that was sort of them testing the waters on what people would think of that.
Well, I know they were certainly strongly hinting that both that and 1001 Spikes would be coming out to Switch.
Yeah.
And I think they might have, you know, teased some stuff on social media and then deleted it. So it seemed very, very likely that those were going to be coming out. And now they've 100% confirmed it. But yeah, it's a great, you know, non-linear 2D Metroid-style exploration-based action-adventure game. It's got some very cool story elements. It's got some quirky characters, some wacky humor. You know, lots of new abilities to get and things to find. It was just really, really fun. And, you know, I'm not really sure what makes it plus. There's going to be a whole lot of new content that wasn't in the previous versions that were on Nintendo systems. And I kind of wonder, you know, why the $30 price tag, which I think is like twice as much as what it cost in its previous forms, not counting the 3D polygonal physical release that was on 3DS. But this is going back to the old traditional 2D visual style. So I kind of wonder about that. But, you know, that aside, the game is so good. I mean, it was kind of underpriced before. I just, it was one of my top games that was available as WiiWare. And, you know, I can hardly say enough good things about it. It's really fantastic. And I will certainly enjoy playing through it all over again. Do you think you're going to pick this one up?
No, I'll probably skip this one. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you haven't played before, I would definitely recommend it.
It'll be ARMS and Splatoon time around June, though, right? Hypothetically.
Well, yeah, probably ARMS should be out. I wouldn't bet on Splatoon being out quite by then. But, you know, there's always room for a game as good as Cave Story, in my opinion.
All right. Going from Cave Story to a game with no story, let's talk about Miitomo.
For that matter, I'm not even sure it qualifies as a game.
True.
But yes, Nintendo's Miitomo, their first mobile offering, has celebrated its one-year anniversary recently. And somehow, I've been quote-unquote playing this game for the entire year. Pretty much everybody I know has given up on it. But here I am, still using this thing. So I just sort of wanted to take a look, see how it's doing a year in, and give a little analysis of that. CJ, you played it when it first came out, I'm sure, right?
I did. I created a Japanese iTunes account so that I could download it.
So you could play it a little bit early, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
And so you were really into it at first, but how long did that last?
It probably lasted about a month of me opening it regularly. And then after that, I would open it whenever there was something special that Nintendo was doing. I mean, they did a couple of updates to it over the last year, and then add special outfits.
Yeah, they would try to bring players back with stuff that was tied into other games. Like, oh, we're going to have a Fire Emblem event or a Zelda event. Or, you know, a Mario event and get some new costumes and stuff like that.
Yep.
That was certainly a reason to come back to it.
And I did that. But I logged in every time. And when the Switch launched, they had several items that were tailored towards the Switch, including like a little Joy-Con mask that you can wear on your face. And I totally logged in and got that.
Well, I think that a lot of players have, you know, sort of taken that attitude is, they will come back and maybe for the special stuff, but for the most part, they aren't using this game, this app at all. It is a stinking ghost town out there, and it has been for months. And I don't think I have a single real-life friend who's still using this.
Yeah.
I think that most of the people I interact with on there are listeners of this podcast.
That's probably true, and I'm sure there are some Player One listeners that I interact with on Miitomo as well. In fact, I think every time I log in, I see that you've definitely been posting stuff, and usually there's at least two or three other people that I see who are regularly into it, answering new questions and whatnot.
Yeah, I've been going on there almost every day, answering the question of the day, and you know maybe a couple other questions. But you know, even my interest is starting to wane. You know, they've done a few updates, as you mentioned, but they haven't really added that much of the experience. They've done these public questions and public outfit sharing, and I tried it out, you know, a little bit, but I immediately found that it wasn't really worth my while. They added sidekick me's, and of course, I made a Mr. T sidekick me. But you know, beyond that, I didn't find that feature too compelling either. They added the ability to decorate your rooms with wallpaper and flooring, and you can even put up posters, or you know, one poster without paying actual cash money to have the ability to do more than one poster. But again, it just, you know, it's not enough. The stuff they've added has been so minor and so incremental. It's like, man, you know, these are things that they should have had as updates, you know, like in the first month or something.
Yeah.
And then after that, they should have been doing things like, you know, they should have had like Animal Crossing style furniture. So you're trying to get these awesome new dressers or, you know, Nintendo decorations, you know, get your own Master Sword to put in your room or your own Mario Kart to put in your room or something like that.
Yeah.
But they really should have gone the full Animal Crossing route with all that kind of stuff.
I think they were probably trying to appeal to non-gamers.
Well, I mean, Animal Crossing is kind of that thing. I mean, there's the gamer stuff, and there's the tons of non-gamer stuff. You know, you have a stone fountain in your house. You put in, you know, toilets and other, you know, crazy decorations.
That's true.
You know, make it, you know, here's a, you know, folding fan or something like that. Just all kinds of nifty stuff. I mean, I like having the gamer stuff, and that's what I always veer towards. But, you know, they could have just done so much to make people want to come back and want to spend money on this.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it. And now I just go in and I'm inundated with people's me photos. And I hate to say it, but the me photos, they're usually not very good.
That's right.
No offense to anyone, but you know, it's hard to make those actually be entertaining and interesting. And so I almost never share my me photos. If I get something that is, you know, definitely, you know, humorous or amusing, I'll be like, okay, let's share this. Otherwise, I feel like I'm just cluttering people's feed with spam.
Yeah, I made some me photos and posted them, and that was fun. But whenever I log in and it gives me, like, a new photo, that it's never good. I never end up saving it. In fact, I wish you could turn that off. Like, I don't want to see any new photos from anyone, including myself. Yes.
yeah, that's, I totally agree. I wish you could turn that option off. It's just something that usually I'm not interested in. And the other problem is, you know, the whole premise of the game is you're answering these questions, and I get almost nothing but repeat questions over and over and over again. And sometimes that makes sense. Like, you know, what did you do last weekend? Okay, well, I have a new answer for that. But they're asking what my favorite movie is. Well, you know, that probably hasn't changed since you asked me that a month ago. For a game that's all about the questions, they really should do something about that. So between that and the photos, I just feel like I'm just going through these motions of, you know, getting hit with the same stuff over and over again. And so I don't know how much longer I can keep this up.
Yeah, I also didn't like the little games that they have to win clothing items. I mean,
oh yeah,
I get, it's sort of like, you know, drop your, it's the me drop.
Yeah, it's a game
of
chance. It's pachinko basically, and it's not completely chance, because if you put your thing in the exact right spot and have the exact right time, and then you can get the item you want.
Yeah.
But it's really, really hard to do that, and usually takes a lot of trial and error to figure out what that sweet spot is.
Yeah, and then the soft currency in the game is this candy, which isn't really used for all that great a purpose. I think.
I mean, that's just for the Miitomo drop, isn't it?
Well, it's for the Miitomo drop, and I think you can reveal answers to your friends.
I think they got rid of that.
Okay.
In the very first version of the game, you had to do that. You could, you know, talk to your friends, but then after a while, it would stop giving you answers. You would have to purchase it with candy. But now you can get as many answers as you want.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's just used for Miitomo drop.
Okay.
These days. Oh well, I don't want to harp on this too long. But yeah, after a year, I'd say this experiment is just about done. I'm probably not going to keep going too much longer. But apparently I am some sort of Miitomo addict, and I'm finding it a little hard to just, you know, quit cold turkey.
You just got to put the app in a folder behind some other things and never think about it again.
I suppose so. I mean, before I was doing it like multiple times a day. At least now I've gotten to the point where it's like, okay, I'll only check it once a day, no more than that. I will say one great thing did come out of all this. Somebody who I was interacting with, I don't know if it's a listener either, but he posted some picture of Hulk Hogan with his Mii. And Hulk Hogan had a sign saying peace in the Middle East. And so I decided my response to that would be one of Hulk Hogan's, you know, 80s and 90s wrestling rivals, Sergeant Slaughter, who was portraying an Iraqi sympathizer at the time. So I posted this picture of Iraqi Sergeant Slaughter. And so he responded with another picture of Hulk Hogan. And somehow we went on for 2 months and over 160 posts of posting the most ridiculous pictures of Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter that we could come up with.
Wow.
And I saved the whole thing on video so it wouldn't be lost to time. There's some really weird stuff in there. Maybe I'll post it to YouTube or something. So once in a while, there is some entertainment to be had through this Miitomo app. But, you know, I think, I don't know how it can come, you know, go beyond that high point. You know, the basic premise of, you know, having this sort of social network and chatting with people and sharing stuff is kind of fun, but, you know, there are so many other ways to do it, and it's turned into a ghost town, and, you know, sorry, Mitomo, but I think I'm going to have to give up on you very soon.
Yeah.
Let's move on from there and check in with some listener mail.
All right.
This first one, it comes from a listener, Travis. He writes, I had a question and wanted to see if you had some guidance. I've been interested in becoming a Nintendo YouTuber for a while now, but I was curious, at what point can someone expect to make a reasonable income from YouTube ad revenue, especially with Nintendo content, and does anybody who wants to make ad revenue on YouTube with Nintendo videos need to join Nintendo's YouTube Creators Program? CJ, I don't know if you've done a whole lot with Nintendo stuff and YouTube, but before I get to you, I will say what I've done, and that is pretty much nothing. Travis, I'm afraid you've come to the wrong person. We tried putting this show on YouTube exactly once. We ran into some troubles and decided to never do it again. So I'm afraid I cannot help in that regard. Mm. CJ, do you have any guidance for Travis?
Well, I tried to put up some Mario Kart 8 footage on YouTube through Mario Kart TV. And of course, Nintendo did a content claim on it. But
well, that's the whole point of Mario Kart TV was to do that.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
But, I mean, my feeling on YouTube stuff in general is I don't think you should go about it looking at it as I'm going to make money on YouTube. You should go about it as I'm going to make these awesome videos, the kind of thing that I would like to see on YouTube that maybe isn't being done. And offer something to viewers that you think people would enjoy, and then worry about making money at it later. But I definitely wouldn't go into it being your number one driver that you're going to make a whole bunch of money, because that really doesn't happen all that often, especially for new channels these days. But if you can find a hook and something that other people aren't doing, or that something interesting that you can bring to it, try it for sure. But don't expect to have like a steady second income out of it.
Very well said, I think. Good advice. Our next letter comes from listener Brian Booth. He says, I do want to take a second to plug Lego City Undercover. This was a sleeper hit for our household on Wii U. We had it for over a year before we got around to it, but after that, we couldn't put it down. My 11-year-old son, who we bought it for, loved it. My 5-year-old son was able to get into it, and I actually completed it to 100%, the first time I've done that for any game in at least 5 years.
Wow.
I love Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and Superheroes Lego games, but I've never been able to get more than a couple hours into them, and this is one that had me captivated for over 60 hours. I played a ton of GTA 3 on my friend's PS2 back in the day, but I don't really get much of a chance to play M-rated games at my current stage of life, and this game really scratched the GTA itch for me, though in a decidedly G-rated way. It's got slapstick humor for kids, but I was surprised at the adult-level jokes, including a tongue-in-cheek homage to The Shawshank Redemption. That had me laughing out loud on more than one occasion. I would highly recommend giving this game a shot, even if just at the Nintendo Select price point for the Wii U version. Yeah, that game did just come out earlier this week on Switch. I have not had a chance to play it myself, either version, so I'm glad to hear Brian's opinion. Have you played this one at all, CJ?
I did. I played it on the Wii U, and like this guy, I loved it.
I've heard lots of good things.
I had not really been too much into the Lego games. You know, I'd played Star Wars, and it was fine, but I never finished it. And I'm not really even a GTA person. Like, I don't really enjoy those games. But for some reason, Lego City Undercover really did it for me. And I think a lot of it has to do with the humor in the game. Because you play as Chase McCain, who's like this very well-known police officer.
And is he a cop on the edge?
Yeah, there's just like a lot of really fun cinematics in the game. And I think this is one of the first games, not the first, that wasn't based on a movie license. So they really sort of went all out on on the humor. And on the Wii U, it did have, or it still does have, very long load times. But
yes,
that was only really going from within the police station to the open world outside. Like, once you're in the open world,
Brian mentioned that. Actually, I didn't read that part of his letter, but he did offer a word of caution about that. Yeah,
yeah, I thought it was fine in the open world, and I finished that game. I played it all the way through and really loved it, especially towards the end. It just gets really crazy. I thought it was really, really fun. The Switch version and just the remastered version in general, because it's also on other consoles as well.
Yes.
Looks really interesting. I'm not going to buy it again, I don't think. But if you have not played it, if you missed it on Wii U, or if you were worried about the long load times, I would highly recommend it, because it is, in my opinion, it's the secret best Lego game.
Or not so secret best Lego game. I've heard a lot of people like it. So
yeah.
There you go. Brian likes it. CJ likes it. Awesome. Good to know. Good to know. Our next letter comes from TJ McCart. That almost sounds like a fake name. I don't know if it is or not. He just says, I know this is a bit late, but I feel one of the most unique experiences on Wii U was Wonderful 101. I've never played such a charming, funny, and high-octane game that had such a distinct play style, for better or for worse. Yeah, we did our top 15 Wii U essential games a few weeks back. And yeah, Wonderful 101 was not on our list. I've only played that game a little bit, and it didn't totally hook me, but I certainly respect that opinion. CJ, did you end up playing this one a lot, Wonderful 101?
I played the demo, and that was enough for me. Like, I know a lot of people like Wonderful 101, and I can totally see why they do, and certainly Platinum.
It's got a great dev team behind it, yep.
Has a great pedigree on beat-em-ups, and this is certainly one of the weirder games that... I've ever seen, but unfortunately, I just couldn't get into it myself.
Yeah, I played the demo and it seemed pretty decent, and then I saw it on discount for like $20, so I picked it up. But yeah, it was never able to really hook me and really captivate me, so that's why I didn't make the list. But yeah, it is a very interesting and innovative game, and so it's cool to hear that it's one of TJ's favorites. And then our last bit of listener mail comes from Johnny P, and he says, do we think Nintendo is intentionally withholding stock? My answer is yes. I tried for years to apologize for Nintendo's supply issues, but I'm at wit's end. Sick of it. Don't understand and can't figure out why I cannot walk into one of 12 different stores and buy one. Better yet, why can't I buy from Nintendo directly? It sucks. If I had the power to organize a revolt, I would. It is time we consumers say enough. Don't throw advertising at me and the links to out-of-stock items. I'm a very bum Nintendo fan and finding it hard to remain one. So I have no idea what Johnny is talking about, whether it's the Switch or whether it's the NES Classic. If it's the NES Classic, I definitely understand, because that thing is still pretty much impossible to find even after 5 months. If it's Switch, I think the supply issues are actually a lot better than they have been in the past, much better than they were with Wii, much better than they were with the NES Classic. I've actually seen them in stores multiple times, and we know that Nintendo is increasing production to try to meet up with demand.
Yeah, I understand the frustration, though, because
yes.
It's so disappointing, especially if you're a Nintendo fan, to not be able to get your hands on the hardware. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think there are some things that may help. Like, I use nowinstock.net. I used that to get my Pro Controller for the Switch and also the Zelda Amiibo. Oh. And that worked nice. Really well. That site will send you text messages when things go in stock. And I think they have a setup for the NES Classic and the Switch.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
If you use that. And there's also a site called BrickSeek.
Oh, yeah.
That will give
I've
you...
been using that.
In-store inventories for like your local Target, Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do Best Buy also. So that you can see if they might have one in stock before you actually go to the store.
Yeah, and as I find long as you know the product's UPC number, then
yeah,
you can do that.
Mm-hmm. I find that's that to handy. Be a lot easier than, calling around and trying to get somebody in the electronics department to tell you if they have a Switch. Even if they had stock, you're pretty likely to be told no. Just because by the time you got to the store, they would be out anyway. So I would definitely use that stuff. Or if you're in Europe, I believe you can actually order directly from Nintendo. They don't do that in the US, but they do that in the EU. So
I didn't realize that.
That's an option. And Amazon Japan, I think, also ships stuff to the U.S., and that's how a lot of people got their Pro controllers when Amazon and the rest of online retail was out of them for all of the time leading up to launch. So that's an option there as well. But I definitely feel your pain on this, because it sucks to want to buy a system and not be able to.
Yes, this is true. This is true, and that's all very good advice. I will say, though, I don't think that Nintendo is intentionally withholding stock. Yeah. Yes, they are conservative. Yes, they err on the side of caution. Yes, they would rather have stuff sold out than have unsold stock just, you know, sitting on shelves that nobody wants. But I worked there for a couple of years, and I know for a fact that, despite popular opinion, they actually do like money, and withholding stock and making resellers drive up prices does not do them any good. So while there certainly is, you know, reason to be frustrated and upset, you probably shouldn't take it personally. You know, probably don't need to go, you know, starting a revolt just yet, unless this is about the NES Classic or the Zelda Master Edition, in which case, you know, grab the pitchforks and the torches and, you know, we'll help you out a little bit.
Yeah, but definitely.
Yeah, I mean, well, I wish that they would do for items like this. And I don't know. I don't understand why, you know, all companies don't just do this, like say, hey, we're going to take online pre-orders months in advance so we can gauge interest and then actually manufacture enough to meet these demands.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like, you know, an idea that's so out there that it would be impossible, but...
Well, then they would have to do fulfillment, right?
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean Nintendo doing it directly, but if they would allow, like, you know, with the NES Classic, it was ridiculous. No one would let you pre-order it at all.
Yeah.
You know, you just, so people, that's why that one was especially nuts. Demand was so high, there was no way to get one. But if they had let, you know, retailers take pre-orders as soon as the thing was announced, they could have actually gauged how popular it was going to be. And then they wouldn't be able to claim, oh, we were totally caught off guard. We didn't think anybody wanted this thing. We thought it was only for lapsed gamers. And so I just wish there was some way that they could do that and be like, okay, we see that we have, you know, 2 million pre-orders. People apparently want this thing. And that would be a nice way to be able to actually meet demand.
I think there's an odd back and forth there, though, because, you know, there are scalpers who would take advantage of those pre-order systems, even if they did exist. So
I suppose, but if they knew that anyone could get one, then I don't think the scalpers would really be interested in that. They'd be like, oh, okay, well, if anyone can get one, there's no reason for us to be scalping this stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. So I think they don't do the long pre-order period, because if scalpers, you know, eat up those pre-orders and it isn't actually a real gauge of demand, then they'd be stuck with all the stock. So I think it's a balance.
Yep, absolutely. But it would be nice if they could do something to do that and make sure that there actually were enough for people to get their hands on it. That's
I agree.
Anyway, that's all we've got as far as listener mail goes this week. So let's take an intermission, and then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is what have we been playing on Nintendo 3DS? All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is 3DS, what the heck have we been playing? Obviously, we've been playing a lot of Switch games recently. That's the new hotness. That's where Zelda is. But we should not neglect our Nintendo 3DS systems. It's given us, you know, so many fun, excellent games over the years. And so I thought it might be fun. Let's just crack open our systems, check out the activity logs, and see what our most played games are on these excellent handheld systems.
And this is the first time I've opened my 3DS since the Switch launched. I had to dust it off and charge it up.
Well, I've certainly been playing mine. Aside from Mario Sports, I've still been trying to get my pet capybara in Story of Seasons Trio of Towns. And for some reason, I guess I can't stop playing Ace Attorney. I don't know why. But yeah, let's take a look in the activity log and see what our top five most played games are. And let's start with you, CJ. What is your number five most played game All on your right. Nintendo 3DS?
At number five, with 34 hours and 59 minutes played, it is Mario Golf World Tour.
Oh, wow.
I said I liked Mario Golf, and I certainly
you weren't lying.
Spent a lot of time playing it, mostly in online tournaments, actually. But,
oh, wow.
I really, really enjoyed this game.
Yeah, so aside from the online tournaments, what kept you coming back?
I just really like the gameplay, and I'm not really a traditional golf player. You know, if it's not mini golf, then I'm not interested.
Well, Mario Golf is a cut above, that's for sure.
Even realistic golf simulations, I'm not really into. But for some reason, Mario Golf with the fun physics and the Mario characters just really hooks me every time.
Understandable. My number five most played 3DS game? Oh, this is a shocker. Ace Attorney Trilogy.
How many hours?
77.
Holy, wow.
Yeah, that's my number five game. 77 hours with Ace Attorney Trilogy. I mean, there's a good excuse for that. It's three games in one.
That's true, yeah.
And while I haven't actually finished the third Ace Attorney game in its, you know, 3D enhanced trilogy form, you know, I have played through one and two, and I'm somewhere in the middle of three. And, you know, these games, you know, if you're trying to read all the dialogue, you're not speeding through, you know, it can take a bit of time.
Sure.
And especially when you've got three games all in one. So that can add up quite a bit. You know, I've played these games a lot, but it's always fun to go back and read your favorite stories. And this is sort of the same way. You know, I wouldn't want to do it too often, but, you know, once things start to, you know, fade a little bit in my memory, I love going back and, you know, replaying them and re-experiencing the mysteries. And, of course, I love shouting objection to the microphone. So always coming back for that.
Nice.
So, as a big fan of that series, it's easy for me to see how I was able to spend so much time on Ace Attorney Trilogy. So moving on, what is your number four?
Well, number four at 41 hours and 11 minutes is Pokemon X.
Pokemon X.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was actually
Good
the
game.
First Pokemon game that I had finished in quite a while. It may even be the first one that I finished, period. And of course,
really?
I've been a Pokemon fan for a long time, but
yeah, that's what I thought.
I don't think I had actually finished any one of them until X.
Huh.
And I think in large part that's to the experience share item, because
yes.
That makes it a whole lot easier to level up your team. And even though I poured 41 hours into it, I did that with the experience share item and beat the Elite Four and finished the game. And I'm very proud of that fact.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, I never actually finished X myself, but it was a really, really good game. And I don't know, I just kept getting distracted by other things because every time I would go back to it, I would play it and I would really enjoy it. And be like, oh man, I got to try to spend more time with this and finish it, but I just never did. I did finish Sun, at least, and I liked Sun even more than I liked X. But X was really, really good in its own right. You could possibly say it was excellent.
Yeah, I still haven't finished Moon yet, but yeah, I probably will finish Moon. I just gotta get off the Switch and back to the 3DS to do it.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It is definitely worth going back to. Like you said, though, in previous Pokemon games, a lot of times I would get sort of hung up with, you know, having the wrong team needing to level up, and it was just so tedious.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the first time they've had an experience share option, but usually you don't get it so early in the game, and it's usually not so accessible
right. At
any rate. But in both X and Y and Sun and Moon, you get it really early, and it's super convenient to use, and it really helps alleviate any of the tedium you would associate with having to grind your characters and level them up. So
yeah,
that's definitely a reason to keep playing. It probably does keep your time count down a little, though. Otherwise, it'd probably be way more.
Yeah,
but I can understand how you'd spend a lot of time.
I think without that item, I probably would have only spent 40 hours in it anyway. Like, I probably would have lost interest and not gotten to the final area.
Okay, so my number four game is Fire Emblem Awakening with 128 hours.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah, speaking of grinding characters and stuff, I'm sure a lot of that came from extra leveling up and playing some of the extra downloadable bonus levels that gave extra EXP. Although I wasn't so much interested in gaining the extra experience points as I was having characters help each other out and then strengthen the bonds between them. And then you would get these different character cutscenes, which then, of course, if you've got characters of opposite sex, then you might be able to, you know, have them get married or something like that.
Right.
And that's what really kept me playing in that game, is just seeing these characters and these relationships. And I was very meticulous. It was like, I would try to pair two characters up, and then it's like, oh, I don't really like the way this relationship is going. I'm going to pair up a different character set. And so then I'd have to spend a lot of time with these two other characters fighting together back to back to build up their level until I was happy with everybody being matched up and we had, you know, a bunch of happy couples in my Fire Emblem Awakening game.
Nice. So. I love that about those games. I love the whole relationship system. It just adds a layer of depth to the game that is so satisfying and really gives you like ownership over your characters.
Yeah, and especially the way that, you know, when the characters get together and then they have kids and it actually changes their appearance based on who the parents are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if what, you know, that changes the hair color or something like that based on, you know, the father or mother or whatever. Just you know, so I see, you know, Noir and she's got white hair. I'm like, oh, that is my Noir, but in someone else's game she has a different hair color, and that is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So let's move on to your next one, your number three. What do you got?
Number three at 49 hours and 21 minutes is Ocarina of Time 3D.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's an excellent game.
Yes, it sure is. And I really like the remake on the 3DS. I think it looks really good. The colors seem to pop more. It's more vibrant, not just the fact that it's 3D, but I think they really went in and made the N64 game look really, really nice in this remake. And I also really appreciate some of the changes that they did in both Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, where they added the little stone that will give you hints. And in Ocarina of Time, it was sort of like the first implementation of it, and it wasn't all that good. And it
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It was back in the starting village, so anytime you wanted to like take a look at it, or I think there were a couple different ones planted around the game, but I mostly used the one in the starting village, so it wasn't all that convenient to get to. But they fixed that up in Majora's Mask and made that a lot better. But Ocarina of Time, in general, is my favorite, or was my favorite 3D Zelda up to a certain point. And I really enjoyed the remake and finished it on 3DS. I had started it when the game came out, but never actually finished it. And then a few years later, I went back and completed it on the 3DS.
Yeah, I finished that one pretty quickly after it came out. I just checked, and my time log on that one was 37 hours myself.
Yeah.
But I have yet to finish Majora's Mask. I'd like to go back to that and finish it off in its 3D enhanced form.
Yeah, I keep getting stuck on that turtle dungeon, or the Zora dungeon in that one, and haven't gotten past it. But I do hope to go back to Majora's Mask at some point.
Yeah, I don't even remember exactly where I am, but it's not terribly far into the game. But still, Majora's Mask is awesome. I can't wait to get back to it. So you were alluding to Ocarina of Time having been your favorite 3D Zelda game. Is that no longer true now with Breath of the Wild out?
Yes. I think Breath of the Wild has surpassed it.
Nice.
Because I think I'm over 95 hours into that game now. And I finished it around 75 hours. So I've spent 20 more hours just wandering around the world in that game. I love it.
Yeah, that game is pretty awesome. It is kind of funny that you mentioned those help stones that are in Ocarina of Time 3D and Majora's Mask 3D. And I think they were in Skyward Sword as well. Mm-hmm. And how that's sort of the direction they were going with Zelda for a while. And then Breath of the Wild comes out and they're like, help stones? No, we are throwing you in here. You're not getting any help whatsoever. Just go for it and see what happens. And I'm pretty happy that they made those choices.
I really appreciate that too. And it has made the whole adventure feel very differently than previous Zeldas did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still have the old stuff, too.
Oh, of course.
But it's pretty much all good when it comes to Zelda.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so my number three most played 3DS game? Hey, it's Fire Emblem Fates, another Fire Emblem game. This time, clocking in at 151 hours.
Whoa.
And the thing about Fates is that, you know, it has three different story branches. I got the collector's edition, so they're all on one cartridge. But guess what? This is only a single branch that I have played through.
Oh.
And somehow, right, it's still more than Awakening. Again, it was mostly because I was doing all this character bonding stuff. But yeah, this was only going through the Birthright storyline. I still have to do Conquest and whatever the third one's called. I can't remember the name right now as I'm saying this. But yeah, after spending 150 hours, I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to take a break before I go try the other branches. But hopefully I'll get to them someday, because obviously I really, really liked Fates. Not as much as I liked Awakening, despite having spent more time with it. But yeah, it's an awesome game itself.
Now, do you play with the permadeath on?
I admit, no, I don't.
Because that, I mean, if you played with permadeath on and had to restart every battle, that is how you could rack up a lot of hours pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, absolutely. But no, that's just too infuriating for me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to that. But still, I just keep playing because I want to, you know, see all these character conversations. It's all about seeing all the content that's out there. Yeah. And especially with this one where you're like creating your own base and there's so much stuff to do there, and there's all these, you know, different characters to talk to after every battle. So it just became really easy to just sink a lot of time into it without really thinking about it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to going back and hopefully not spending another 150 hours, but
yeah,
certainly seeing the other story branches and the lots and lots of other content that I have yet to witness. On to number two, then. What do you got?
All right, number two, with 82 hours and 18 minutes, it is the Street Pass Mi Plaza.
Uh-huh.
Now, I am a fiend for Street Pass. Like,
yes, me too.
Anytime there was like a GDC or PAX, mm-hmm, or any sort of E3 thing, I would always
Comic-Con?
Have my...
Did you ever go to Comic-Con?
I did not get to go to Comic-Con, but if I had,
oh,
I would have
the craziest
had
place, yeah,
my 3DS right there to gather Street Passes. Mm-hmm. And I have started, my times played for this one is 299 times, which is a lot, I think.
299?
Yeah.
That seems low.
Does it seem low? I don't know. Maybe,
it
maybe
does
it's,
to me.
Maybe it's because I just automatically had Street Pass Mi Plaza just loaded up all the time and never booted anything else. But I played,
you know how many times I've played Street Pass Mi Plaza?
How many?
1,756.
Whoa.
Of course, you know, I did work at Nintendo Power, so
that's right.
You know, me and all my coworkers would come in with our 3DSs every day, and so we were always street passing. And
I think I probably played it more outside of conventions had I gotten a lot of street passes just wandering around, and that really didn't happen because I didn't work at Nintendo Power, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, going out on a regular day-to-day basis usually didn't yield that many passes, but we got lots of them at work when Nintendo Power still existed. And yeah, even, you know, after it didn't, my coworkers at MacLife and you know, the other publications would often have their 3DSs there. So
yeah. And of course, I played a lot of the Street Pass games as well. I've
yes,
purchased, I think, pretty much, I think I have purchased all of the games. And
I certainly have.
A lot of them. I bought the VIP upgrade or whatever.
Yeah, me too. It is the stupidest thing I've ever bought. That was the biggest waste of $5. So dumb.
But I love Street Pass so much that I felt, what's
yeah,
another
same
$5?
Same thing.
It's fine.
Same thing. I'm like, I got to get all the content for Street Pass.
That's
I've
right.
only played it 1,750 times. I might as well spend $5 on this stupid feature that does no good and should have been a free feature anyway.
That's right. Now, how much have you spent on Badge Arcade? Because that's the real test.
Not that much. I'll bet I have spent, you know, like $15 or $20.
Yeah, I probably have spent about $10 on the Badge Arcade.
I had to get every single Mega Man badge, and I spent a little bit on some Zelda badges. I was like determined to get everything related to Twilight Princess. And then a lot of the old pixel art stuff would really get to me. It's like, oh, I got to do Punch-Out. Yeah. But a lot of those I was able to get for free. But like Mega Man, I had to be 100% complete. So.
Yeah, I had to get the pixelized versions of the various Nintendo systems to put on the folders
that contained
those virtual console games. It was very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wish that there was like a pixelized Sega Genesis that I could put on there for the 3D Sega classics as well.
Yeah, that's a missed opportunity right there. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if they ever did Ace Attorney badges, I would just go nuts and have to buy all those as well. But we digress. This is about Street Pass Mii Plaza. And yeah, I got all the mini games in there. I love the fishing, especially. The fishing I was super hooked on.
Yep.
I could not stop until after I'd done all that. And I had to get a blooper and a cheap. I just had to. I was surprised how addicted I was.
I really like the stock market game. Yeah. The stock market game that they did.
I liked it a lot better than I thought I would.
That was one of the recent ones. And yeah, when I first read the description of it, I was like, I don't know about this
one. Yeah, it sounds really boring. Stocks.
But it is really fun.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun than you would think. Like, because they were giving away that one free and the slot car racing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, well, obviously I'm going to go with the slot car racing. That sounds way more exciting than stocks. But in the end, I actually ended up enjoying the stock market one more, just because it was so simple and easy to pick up and play, and didn't have any of the frustration that the slot cars did.
True. My favorite is still Warrior's Way. That remains my favorite. I have 9,999,999 troops.
Yeah, I certainly did it one time. I think I do. Yeah, I was playing that so hardcore for a while, but then once I finally completely conquered it, I don't think I've played it since then. That's been a few years.
Yeah, it's too bad that Street Pass and those Street Pass game experiences are not around on Switch.
Yes, that is completely true. I completely agree with you. And those new games, actually, I really haven't played those as much as I'd like, because I'm not really in a situation where I can get lots of Street Passes anymore. Mm. I even took my 3DS with me when I went to Disneyland like 5 months ago, and I thought, well, maybe I'll get some Street Passes here, and I still barely got any. So yeah, I just haven't got as much use out of those as I would like, but still, overall, I've spent a ton of time, so I can certainly understand why you have as well.
Yes.
I guess I should move on to my number two game then, shouldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
My number two is Animal Crossing New Leaf with 160 hours.
Wow, all right.
And I don't really consider myself that big of an Animal Crossing fan. I'm sure part of this is because I would just sort of leave my system on and open, and I would have times where I'd just be like, okay, anyone want to come and visit my town? Because that's what you would do if you wanted to, do some, just open up your town's gates online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And let people play. So I'm sure that artificially inflated it. But, still, there's just so much to do in the game, and so much stuff to collect, and bells to earn, and fossils to sell, and fish to capture, and all that jazz.
And outfits to design. And
yes, yes.
Yeah, neighbors to talk to.
Harass.
Yeah, lots of that.
Yeah, so the first 6 months or so that this was out, I was playing it an awful lot. And like I said, if I wasn't playing it, I would just have it open there in case anyone wanted to come visit my town. So yeah, that really racked up the time. I was hoping that I would really get back into it with this Amiibo update they did, since I'm such a big Amiibo fan. And while that got me back consistently for like a week, I kind of stopped after that. But who knows, maybe now this is reminding me, I can get back into it a little bit more. But yeah, this one, apparently, I've only played it 130 times. That still seems like a lot of times.
That does.
All right, then. It's come down to this.
It has.
Number one. What is your number one 3DS most played game?
At 138 hours and 36 minutes, it is Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Well, that's anticlimactic that after what I just said, huh?
But like you, for the first 6 months, I played Animal Crossing probably every day. Towards the end of that, it might have been once or twice a week, but I just really, really enjoyed this game. I played the GameCube game a lot, and then when the Wii and DS versions came out, I played them, but didn't really get all that into them. And then this 3DS game just really hooked me. And like you, I also spent time leaving my 3DS open for people to come visit or dig holes, dig potholes that I would fall into later, or steal my town's fruit or do whatever they were going to do.
So usually I got people like delivering me new fruits I didn't have and things like that. It was usually a pretty pleasant experience for me, at least.
Yeah, I had some of that too, but other times people would just dig holes around my house, and that was that was fun too.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was really the first Animal Crossing that I really, really got into. Mm. I barely played the GameCube version at all. I certainly didn't play it much on Wii. I don't think I played the DS version much either. But this one came out, and I was like, okay, I seem to have so many friends who are, you know, really into this series. I'm going to really give it my all this time. So I made sure to spend lots and lots of time with Animal Crossing, and clearly I did,
yes.
As with 160 hours logged in.
Yeah, I really liked the update that they did. I played that a little bit, but really it was only to get a few things for my house. Like, I think they had a Wii U you could get, or a 3DS you could get for your house, and Splatoon stuff too.
Yeah, they added new mini games.
Oh yeah, and they had mini games too. I played some of those. Some of those were retreads from the Amiibo Festival game.
Yes, the terrible Amiibo Festival game.
Yeah.
But they were like the best parts of the Amiibo Festival game, so that stuff actually is worth going back and experiencing. And
that's,
yeah,
right.
I kind of forgot about that until now.
Including the Animal Crossing Puzzle League game, which I love. Planet Puzzle League and Tetris Attack and Pokemon Puzzle League, and really anything having to do with that puzzle system I love. So I was ecstatic when they said, hey, it's going to be Animal Crossing Puzzle League and inside Animal Crossing. And I totally wiped the floor with the computer the first time I played that game, but had a lot of fun with it. And I hope they do that as a standalone game for Switch. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, I'm not as big a fan of Puzzle League as you are, but certainly I recognize it is pretty darn good, and it's a great added, you know, free bonus feature to have in this game. So
definitely,
yeah, definitely good reasons to go back and keep playing this one even more and more.
And I did end up buying some Animal Crossing Amiibo to use. Not so much in this game, but I guess I used them more to get stuff, get items in Breath of the Wild.
Well, I was already all in on the Amiibo, so they didn't really need to convince me. But yeah, I did use some of the Zelda Amiibo to get the characters to move into my town. I got Gan to move in.
Oh yeah.
And but yeah, I haven't really played the game since then. So he's probably like commandeered the town and burnt the whole darn thing to the ground in the months that have passed since then.
Well, so that's to be expected.
I know. I had it coming. I mean, I'm the one who invited Ganon in.
That's right.
So maybe I should have invited Wolf Link to fight him off. I don't know.
Ah, too perfect.
Okay, then. Moving on to my number one most played 3DS game. Da-da-da-da! Anticlimactic. It's also Street Pass Mi Plaza.
Nice.
Having played it, as I said, 1,756 times, it should not be too surprising. My playtime is 334 hours.
Whoa! Wow!
I don't know. Again, some of this could be artificially inflated by accidentally leaving it open, but somehow, yes, that's what it says, 334 hours. It's ridiculous.
That's amazing.
I don't think I have anything else to add over what we were saying about it earlier, but, I mean, it really is one of the great things, and perhaps one of the most unsung things about 3DS that made that system so darn fun, that made me actually want to carry it around and pass people. I mean, I would take this, you know, walking with me everywhere I went for quite a while. It's probably been about, you know, maybe a year since I stopped doing that. But up until then, I was just always doing it. And, you know, they really, you know, sunk their hooks into me good and got me to take advantage of the features of this system. And yeah, it was great. It really worked for me.
It's very true. I would bring it even to, like, PlayStation Experience show.
Yeah.
And like very quietly,
I think I
like
did that
slip,
too.
Slip that in and out of my pocket and check my street passes. And of course, you know, there are a lot of game fans who had brought their 3DSs to that show as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yes, I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I guess there's nothing much else to say about this topic, so I suppose we ought to wrap it up and bring this show to a conclusion. But before we go, we do still have time for a dramatic reading. This time, it'll be from the intro scroll of the Nintendo 3DS game 3D Streets of Rage.
Mm-hmm.
This city was once a happy, peaceful place. Until one day, a powerful secret criminal organization took over. This vicious syndicate soon had control of the government and even the police force. The city has become a center of violence and crime where no one is safe. Amid this turmoil, a group of determined young police officers is sworn to clean up the city. Among them are Adam Hunter, Axel Stone, and Blaze Fielding. They are willing to risk anything, even their lives, on the Streets of Rage.
I could hear the Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack in the background while you were reading that.
That's appropriate, because when this goes live, there will be a Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack.
I'm sure. That, behind it, so. Exactly.
So, yes. Yes, indeed. Great game. Great soundtrack. It's not one that I can really make fun of in any way. It is. I'm a big fan of beat-em-ups, and that is one of the best. And the 3DS version is especially good. I know I've said this on the show many times, but all the Sega 3D classics on 3DS are fabulous, but I especially adore Streets of Rage and Streets of Rage 2. So yeah, if you like punching people in the face, yeah, check them out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I guess that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and you can find CJ at SuperPac. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be swell if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Johnston.
Have a great night.
And my favorite exotic dancer, Shantae.
Ready!
We will see you next time. God damn it. Spider. Oh, my. Hold on a second. I'm going to have to murder something.